Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Bard's Poetry Revolution. I'm James P. Wagner with Local Gems Press, and we're here today for Bards Against Hunger 2020. Hopefully the first of, hopefully we get to do one or two more this holiday season. As you all know, Thanksgiving is in a couple of days. It's been an interesting year. It's going to be an interesting Thanksgiving. And normally Bards Against Hunger, we have, this time of year, we have live events in various states. We have live poetry events where we gather food for local shelters. And we get together and we do poetry, and it started off all the way back in 2013 with just one event, and then as the years went on, it kind of spread to different states. It's taken place in New York, Virginia, Connecticut, Wisconsin, Kansas, Indiana, Pennsylvania, and quite a few others. Obviously, because of what's going on in the world right now, we can't get together live and be doing these events all over the country like we normally would. But that's okay, because we can still do things virtually. Since COVID actually started happening, we've actually been doing Bards Against Hunger events with our book launches, and we've actually donated over the equivalent of 7,000 meals to Feeding America during all of those. And today we're doing another virtual reading for Bards Against Hunger. We have, I believe, 8 states represented from the United States in tonight's lineup of about 15 poets. And we've actually just from this small group that we've had here, actually, we've just added about another $500 of funding to various charities, some Feeding America and a lot of local pantries and places for the people in their various areas, which is really the important thing because, you know, charity begins at home. You know, we want to help those right next to us. And it's very important at this time to actually be donating more and more to charity because there's a lot of food shortages out there, particularly with all the places that actually service those in need this time of year. They've actually, obviously demand has been a lot higher this year than it has been in previous years, and they're not getting as much help as they've had in previous years. So every little bit, even if it's just a couple of dollars, can definitely go a long way to helping those who have less, so that's always a good thing. So, without further ado, we're just going to get into the poetry lineup. The first one that we have for today is Debbie Tosin Kilday from the National Beat Poetry Festival in Connecticut, who also runs the Connecticut Bards Against Hunger. So, let's give it up for her.
Hunger Hurts by Debbie Tosin Kilday. Hunger makes my lips parched, but my eyes are moist with tears. There is no moisture in dry bread. There is no food in the aching stomachs, no sustenance for the parasites. The children cry out for scraps. Their outstretched hands grasp for crumbs. Some worship their idols made of gold, for a place in heaven paid in full. But they turn a blind eye to the poor, if only they cared. They won't relieve the suffering unless they get their applause for being fake humanitarians. But there are those that have half of nothing, and they will share half of whatever they have. Hunger is something that shouldn't exist, but it continues. If the prices are not met by buyers, the crops are buried and turned into soil. Money is what they want, although it is hard to swallow. I, too, hungered for many years. My eyes met the empty gazes from people unwilling to help. Now I have food, and I'm grateful, but I give to those who have none, not for attention. I want no reward. I give because I have felt the pangs of hunger. It is hard to ignore and harder to alleviate. If I can help alleviate that pain, if I can fill the stomachs of a few, I do. Because I never want to see the suffering. I cannot tolerate the pain. Their pain was my pain until someone helped me. Please help feed as many as you can by sharing whatever you can. Hunger hurts in more ways than one.
Thank you, Debbie, both for your poem and for your contribution to the food banks up there in Connecticut and for doing the Connecticut Bards Against Hunger. And that's a good message. If everybody can just feed a couple of people, then we wouldn't have the huge problem that we have. So next, we're going to go from Connecticut. We're going to be going down to Virginia for Mike Krogan.
My name is Mike Krogan, and this is my poem, God is Love Is. God is love is an aspiration when the universe senses in herself potential to treat herself with kindness. God is love is an invitation when the universe calls out to herself, imploring, coaxing, cajoling compassion. God is love is a recognition when the universe spies her reflection in a still pool and sees herself with simple clarity. God is love is a reverberation when the universe responds to this sense, this calling, this identity, and replies, yes, my love.
Thank you, Mike, for your poem and for your donation. So next up, we're bouncing over to New York, which is where the first Bards Against Hunger actually started, on Long Island. And Long Island, a poet coming up, who was actually the Poet Laureate for Suffolk County a few years back. Let's give it up for Robert Savino.
Thanksgiving greetings from Robert Savino. In this oppressive year, it becomes more important to be thankful for what we have and what we have to give to those who are in need. My poem, Short Reach of Outstretched Hands. History has established tradition for this season of fallen leaves, unraked, in a stir of acorn shells, with stories of spirits passing through ceilings of years to reap soil and scatter seeds. I remember our home filled with family, mouths filled with food, praise and thanks filled the air with each sip of cider or homemade wine. From our window, I could see young Douglas next door, peeking through the blinds, tears in his eyes, not to have a seat at our table. I break away from the festivities and pack two drumsticks for a night nosh. And from our Sunday banquet, between Wonder Bread bookends, I fill a Monday morning schoolboy's knapsack. Thank you. And enjoy the holiday.
Thank you, Robert. So staying in New York for a little bit, we're going to hear a poem from Alex Edwards Boudreau, a regular here on the Bards Poetry Revolution podcast.
Wise Men from the West by Alex Edwards Boudreau. We altruistic ones, we care. We wakened ones, we are aware. We are now hip. We are concerned. We are outraged. We are sickened. We know little to naught the molten pain your hunger has wrought. Thresh somehow with fleshless bone your paltry chaff from fields of stone. Pools of want, the eyes of your young, their wet love, their dusty dry lungs, their bellies, that photographed trope, all strain, strain with moribund hope. This dust of gold, spilled from our chest, we send you now at your king's behest. May you reap from its magic touch a shred of the wealth we urgently clutch.
Thank Thank you, Alex. And moving on to another frequent contributor to Bard's Poetry Revolution, give it up for Mary Phillips.
Fall of the Maple Fairies. The moon had grown fat, hanging heavy with the stars, as a cool yet foreboding breeze unsettled the little maple fairies from their wistful slumber. "We have made our home upon this blessed branch," said one fairy to the rest, "but now the voice of autumn calls us on." "She speaks in truth," replied the boldest of the fairies, adorned in deep crimson with a sorrowful heart. "From bud to leaf I have known you all, and a great companionship we have shared. But this new season beckons now. It is time to gather our tears and be brave." The little fairies quivered as the light of day slowly appeared and a deep sorrow cast itself upon the branches of their home. A sorrow so heavy that the smallest of fairies, dressed in yellow but just as fair, felt the need to finally speak. Her voice was gentle and one of hope as she spoke these words prayerfully and serenely. "Thank you all for your friendship, as I am grateful for every sister leaf and feathered friend of this life. I will not mourn today, however, and choose to rejoice and be glad in this day, for I shall not see any of you wither, but only fly." And as the day came to a close, colorful falling leaves glistened in the sunlight, and a song sailed upon the autumn wind, whispering, "Farewell, dear sisters, farewell."
Thank you, Mary. Very good imagery. So, staying here in New York for a while, got one from the Minable JG.
What is written in the law? How readest thou?
Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy strength, and with all thy mind, and thy neighbor as thyself.
Thou hast answered right. This do, and thou shalt live.
And who is my neighbor?
A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and fell among thieves, which stripped him of his raiment, and wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead. And by chance there came down a certain priest that way, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. And likewise a Levite, when he was at the place, came and looked on him, and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him, and went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, and set him on his own beast, and brought him to an inn, and took care of him. And on the morrow, when he departed, he took out 2 pence, and gave them to the host, and said unto him, "Take care of him, and whatsoever thou spendest more, when I come again, I will repay thee."
Which now of these three, thinkest thou, was neighbor unto him that fell among the thieves?
He that showed mercy on him.
Go, and do thou likewise.
Bard's Poetry Revolution.
Thank you for that, JG. I always love when poems have accompaniment to music, and thank you for your recitation of that one, an important message, definitely to remember today. And if we can interrupt the poetry for a moment, I just want to welcome Nick Hale onto the line. Hey, Nick.
Hi, James. Sorry, I'm late. I hit every single traffic light in the entire United States, and there were two accidents. So, yeah, it's been a journey. But I really enjoyed that. I kind of wish I had caught the beginning of it, so I may have to go back in later and listen to it myself when no one's watching.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty of, Bard's Poetry Revolution, is if you miss it live, you just go back and you listen to the recording.
Exactly.
So, and for those out there who don't know, Nick heads up Nova Bards and is responsible for the Bards Against Hunger that are down there in Virginia. Actually, he sort of chiefs several readings that happen down there, or he's partnered with other groups. So there's, I think, 3 Bards Against Hunger readings that happen in Virginia when the world is normal. Is that right?
That was the plan for this year.
Yeah, because I know you've done it with Poets Anonymous, and I think you were going to do it with Spilled Ink, or if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and then there was another group out in Arlington we were talking about doing. Northern Virginia is geographically huge, so, yeah, we were sort of splitting it up into counties, because Arlington is about an hour drive from me in Fairfax County, and then Prince William, parts of that, is about an hour drive from me in the opposite direction. And it's all still Northern Virginia, so it kind of helps to break it up a little bit.
Yeah, well, the way I see it is if there's a different food bank servicing a different area, then that should be a different Bards Against Hunger. You know, it's like wherever there's a need for, the food, and there's a need everywhere. So we've had several different ones on Long Island as well, but the main one that happens is in Huntington for Long Island Cares. But, speaking of New York, we have another reader from New York, and then I think we're moving from New York to another state, so let's give it up. This is actually upstate New York. Give it up for John McMullen.
I wrote this poem in the very beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, thinking it was going to end soon. I had a hunch. I had just gotten off the phone with the shipyard when my wife Barbara called. Very proudly, I told her I just arranged to purchase a great Chris Craft cabin cruiser that sleeps 8. She let out a scream. What? You make no money as a poet and you order $1 million boat? I explained that I had a hunch that I had won the $300 million lottery. She hung up. I guess it's a good thing that I didn't get to tell about the house and the sound in your shell to moor the boat. Whether I'd thrown out the hand sanitizer and stopped washing my hands because the president had a hunch that the World Trade Organization was all wet on its coronavirus predictions.
Thank you, John. Yeah, that would be great if one had $1 million as a poet, but living in the wrong continent and the wrong time period. Need to go back to ancient Japan, and they had the recitation contest.
That's my favorite part. You make no money as a poet, you bought a boat. it kind of reminds me of college days.
So we're going to bounce to New York now over to
anybody studying that.
We're going to bounce now from New York over to Pennsylvania. Let's give it up for Cassandra Arcaro.
Hi, it's Cassandra here. Today I will be reading you a short poem called Hope Blooms. Hope Blooms. Silent trees, moonlight so bright, crickets sing on a warm spring night. Flowers still grow up from the dirt. The sunflower blooms its wild petals, reaching out towards the evening sky. The night was unexpected. Dark and alone, she found herself. A single flower stood high, sprouting love through her petals, as they expanded beyond the garden's wall. Days pass, waiting to bloom like flowers, rising and growing in the sun like towers. The journey lies in a single moment of time, soon enough, the world will align.
Thank you, Cassandra. And now we're going to go a little further west over to Kansas for Cassie Runyon.
Please, brother. His eyes are pleading, begging, as his wife pushes him forward, his wheelchair banging against the bright orange rickshaw where a stranger sits ignoring, the thin arm stretched for a coin that never comes. Please, brother, the only request he knows, his legs lost just at the knee, he clings to a seat and clutches his metal plate to his chest, his chair bouncing against the broken pavement below as they speed towards the line to wait for their rations. Please, brother, he coughs from behind his scarf, pulled up to his nose, protecting his face from the heavy clouds of grime and dirt and smog as it weighs down against his frail shoulders, as heavy as the starvation. Please, brother, he whispers towards the fruit, his eyes barely able to meet the gaze of the man standing there behind the table, watching him warily. The frail man thinks of his children and raises his arms, imploring with the only words he can. Please, brother.
Thank you, Cassie. So, we just went from New York to Pennsylvania to Kansas, and now we're going to be bouncing back to the East Coast, and we're going to be going down to Maryland. The next poet is Matthew Powell.
I'm Matt Powell. I decided to record two poems just because they're really short. But anyway, the first one is called Burn. I saw a fiery light and I realized it was you. As you got closer and my skin began to burn, I said to myself, this is how I want to die. The next one is called Moonlight. I miss kissing you in the moonlight, down that back road by the water. The only thing we wore was the moonlight, atop a blanket in the grass, motions of love. We got finished and I'd hold you tight. Your eyes glistened in the moonlight. We were 18. Oh, how naive, talking of forever that will never come beneath the moonlight.
Well, that's okay that you recorded two, because they were short, but they were pretty
yeah,
packed.
Yeah, those ones are really quickly.
You know, that was they were short, but very, very full. So, you know, thank you for that, Matt. So, yeah, as I was saying earlier on in the program, we have at least eight states represented in tonight's lineup of just 15 readings. So, yeah, pretty good.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, you know, the real shame that we can't do this all live, but, you know, it's been a crazy year. So hopefully
yeah,
when things resume, we will have more Bards Against Hunger readings in more places than ever before. So next, we're bouncing over to Indiana for Stacy Savage, who has hosted Bards Against Hunger out in Indiana and also helped with the Bards Against Hunger Indiana anthology. So, Stacy Savage, everybody.
From an Eagle's View by Stacy Savage. Have you ever wondered what it's like to fly free, to see the world as far as the eye can see, to view the surroundings from high and from low, to hear only the sound of a distant echo, to float in the air with the wind being your guide, to admire many rainbows that the trees tend to hide, to see the misty mornings over a beautiful mountaintop, to glide over a flowing river that never seems to stop? If you were an eagle, you would wonder no more, for it can see things you have never seen before. Next time you look into the sky of blue, think of what it's like from an eagle's view.
Bird effects in the background. That's something
yeah,
I like about.
Cool.
That's something I like about the, you know, the online readings is you can do more with the the recitation tracks than you can online without, like, lots of equipment.
Yeah.
Although I have seen some poets who have brought recording devices and stuff and, you know, kind of created the setting, even, like, turned the lighting down and had props in the background and done some ambient music and all that stuff. So some poets do go all out in person. What was that?
There was that one reading we went to. The person basically had their own backup band.
Yeah, that I wasn't even thinking of that one, but that's that happens sometimes too. So you know, poets come in all shapes and sizes and kinds. So, and now we're going to be bouncing from Indiana all the way over to the West Coast to San Diego, California, for Chris Vinoy, who is instrumental in the various San Diego Bards Against Hunger events out there, and also the San Diego Bards Against Hunger anthology. So, thank you, Chris Vinoy.
Since you still have only you can hear my carefully lettered thoughts. A smile crinkles at the edge of my eyes when the last period sings my love close. You fold me away in velvet soft vibration, press the others of my kind that span the vicinities of yesterday, as anticipation strokes the text of our musings. I connect past the future. I will come again soon, stamped and poet marked, sealed with a tongue that remembers the insides of your thighs, the soft of your lips, but the love that is always at the end of unspoken words.
Creative uses of background during some of the tracks that had a very 1940s like jazz noir feel to it. That was really cool.
Yeah, I really like the music effects in that one. I think it adds a lot to the poem. I mean, it sounds like it was a great poem on its own, but having the music really pushed it over the edge.
Yeah, definitely. So we're traveling back down to Virginia for the second time. This program for John Donnelly.
Hi, everyone. My name is John Donnelly. I have a two-parter concerning an image of a rainbow I set on a shelf waiting for a few words to surround it. Here's the first part. It's called Wishful Thinking. If you have ever wondered, as I have from time to time, from where came the fairy tales and the lessons they're assigned? Glowing past the horizon, for example, is the gold, waiting till some lucky one finds that end of a rainbow. There was a poor old couple who tended an Irish field. The land became so barren that only carrots it would yield. As the farmer pulled the last of his meager orange crop, a leprechaun was tangled in its roots and could not drop. Now captive of the farmers and desperate to be freed, he offered them a prize wish in appealing to their greed. A house, a farm, and horses, back to youth and great riches. The pixie interrupted, he has the best of wishes. If they let him on his way, he'd tell them where they could find the greatest treasure of all, there's no other of its kind. You'll not want for anything if you follow to its end. The rainbow's gold is waiting for you to find it, my friends. As the leprechaun ran, over his shoulder he looked. The poor old folks were walking, believed the story he rooked. Their eyes were glitter glazed, they passed a dusk and dark and dawn, in search of that pot of gold just over the horizon. Did they search for all their days? Not so many. They were old, but left everything behind, blinded by a tale was told. And the second one is called Wet and Gold on Route 211. On the way home one evening, heading west from Warrenton, through the dark gloom of the heavy low clouds, pregnant with trillions of dive bombing splashes, not cold enough to be hail, but too loud to be called rain, driving toward a sun dropping from the dour cotton ball floor just flown over the Blue Ridge, one light hour from it touching that crisp top line of shadows, I caught a glint of color shimmering in the rear view, prismatic phantoms painting red, yellow, green, blue ablaze, each stolen side glance longer to dance in step with sirens left uncovered by the storm. Not daring a steady gaze, I slid on the French all rays discovered while rummaging through an odd lot bin of saved, then in death, sloughed off eyewear an optometrist father left behind to shield my eyes from the sun-glared glass and avert them to the road. For a moment, mesmerized, drawn away into a dream, fate flaunts its luminous tail, a bit of found faith to see beauty lift her virgin veil to be kissed with loving eyes, a flirtation that lingers, riding into a brightness, soon first to fade in the dusk, to sleep in spectral chaos until dark meets the new dawn, yet less inclined to ridicule some leprechaun's tale of gold. Thank you.
Thank you, John. So, from there we're actually heading back to New York for M. Francis Garcia.
Sunset by M. Francis Garcia. As evening enters, peach steals the scene, pours its golden nectar of delight across tired sky. Soon bright colors fade, tuck themselves away for the day, and night's dark curtain closes into tranquil, nondescript poses. Now pastel's sacred intensity claps within, then lingers on soul's eternal stage.
I like the sound effect at the end for that one.
Yeah, that's one I'd like to hear again. So I have a list of recordings I need to jump back through as I listen to this again.
So the last track that we have for the evening is also from New York. It's from some scrub named James P. Wagner. Since we've been talking about, since we've been talking about recordings with the interesting stuff on the tracks, I'm actually going to play one that I did about a year ago called A Stolen Flower that has a little bit more beyond just the poem. So hopefully it withstands the test of time.
Today I gave a flower to a complete stranger. No strings attached, no ulterior motives, just a nice gesture for an older lady sitting by herself who looked lonely. She was thankful for the gift, claimed I was such a nice young gentleman that I had made her day. What she didn't know was that the flower was stolen, in a manner of speaking. I grabbed it on impulse as I was sitting down in the lobby area of a hotel meeting space. You see, today I went on one of my odysseys, exploring the road between business trips. I like to take a day to myself from time to time to sit back and observe before the hustle and bustle begins. I was wandering the halls of a casino after a few rounds of poker and came to the hotel area, past the main lobby, went up the escalator to the meeting rooms. I had no meeting, at least at this time or in this hotel, but I've walked these types of hallways so often on the way to my own business that every so often I like to pretend that I'm there for a purpose when I'm not, to just walk the halls and enjoy the decorations placed perfectly for an environmental feeling that most in their stride, including myself, don't normally notice. As I sat there letting people walk by me, wondering if they were wondering what kind of business I might be there for, I saw the flower sitting with many others in a decorative pot on the middle of the table next to me, and in that moment of contemplation and observation, I took it on the impulse that in this moment, even though I was not there on business, even though I was just exploring, perhaps for these very reasons, that I too deserved something beautiful. No one would notice the misincarnation, any more than the many who came and went noticed his presence in the first place. It seemed like a perfect pairing for the lonely woman who sat by herself as people passed her by, and in that moment, as I gave the flower to her, it dawned on me that I had not just stolen a flower, I had stolen a moment. I had reclaimed something beautiful for myself and for her. And in this observation, and the following moments of contemplation, as I looked a little closer as I made my exit, so many more beautiful things surrounded me. And as I paused, I wondered how many flowers I and everyone else had managed to let pass us by unstolen.
You know, it's interesting hearing a recording of yourself you did over a year ago, because you almost can completely remove yourself from the fact that that was you.
Yeah, I imagine it must be a little bit jarring. But I kind of wish I had known you were going to use that one. That would have prepared something.
Well, no, I mean, it wasn't really jarring exactly. It was more this, like, I was able to actually listen to it as if I was an outsider, which is actually kind of good. And, you know, just thinking about the subject matter of that poem a year later, about, you know, the missing moments and all that stuff, it's like, yeah, I think that's, it was almost prophetic in a way about all those little moments that, you know, took for granted and now, didn't notice, and boy, do I wish I noticed a whole lot of them at this point. So,
yeah,
lesson for going forward when the world is back to normal.
A simple thing is, you know, giving a stranger a flower would elicit a very different reaction now, too, than it would have a year ago.
Yeah, almost entirely, I would say. Like probably a complete polar opposite reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a poem that's easily on hand or whatever you want to read, feel free.
I may have something on my phone. That would probably be the easiest. So, unfortunately, since I wasn't here for the start of the show, did we talk much about Bards Against Hunger and how it got started?
Yeah, a little bit. I talked about how it started in 2013, and it started off with just the one event here on Long Island in Huntington at the Conklin Barn. For the first year, it was actually for Island Harvest, and then it switched over to giving food to Long Island Cares, which is smaller and more in need. And then how I did that, it was just, that was the only reading for a couple of years. And then a few years ago, how you started doing one down in Northern Virginia, and then, you know, realizing, oh, hey, that's twice the amount of food that was being given to the poor by having the two readings, we kind of started seeking out, you know, poetry partners who were organizers in other areas who we'd met through Local Gems Press, and then they started, you know, like, they were doing readings anyway, so how much harder was it to, you know, just throw Bards Against Hunger onto it, gather some food, and then give it to a local shelter. It was like the same philosophy of, like, all the marathon runnings for a cause and all that stuff. It's like you're running the race anyway. You know, you may as well do some good while you're doing it. And then how it kind of almost became the McDonald's of poetry, because suddenly everybody wanted to kind of do Bards Against Hunger at their reading, and, you know, now it operates in, you know, or it's operated like 14 states and even in some other countries. So, yeah, that's
it's
pretty much.
It's a great idea, though, because it's one of those things that you don't realize how simple but good it is until you've done a couple, or you've been to a couple, and you think, why haven't we been doing this for years? I mean, I guess at this point we have been doing it for years, but you say, why haven't we been doing this for decades? You know, it's the perfect kind of event to do a food drive at.
Oh, yeah,
so,
no, definitely. And also, like, you know, because now that I've gotten to actually personally, you know, I'm not at every single Bards Against Hunger, obviously, there's too many of them, but I've personally been to ones in various states and gone to local shelters in some of those states. And, like, you know, it's also interesting because in a state like New York, it's like there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of help, there's a lot of businesses that give help and a lot of stuff, but I've been to some other places that maybe don't get as much help, and so when you walk in with just a few bags of food, you know, or a couple of boxes, it's like it has like a real meaningful impact in that area, and you get to see like the looks on people's face about how like excited they are to get it. So yeah, it's like it does give a whole new perspective about you know, the haves and the have-nots and all that.
Some of the reactions people have when you bring in what seems like it may not be that much food compared to some of the other Bards Against Hunger we've done, and then you bring it into that food pantry and they go, whoa, like that's the biggest donation we've had all day. You know, you never realize how far things are going to go. And also, sometimes you don't realize how many people may be in need in specific areas, like Northern Virginia where I live, or even Long Island. You have, there's generally more affluent areas, but you still have a large percentage of people who are struggling and need that help. So, you know, no matter where you live, there's always going to be somebody in your community who's going to need it.
Yeah, definitely. And in fact, it's, you know, one of the myths or, you know, one of the misconceptions about hunger is that, you know, that in an affluent area there will be less of it. But, you know, quite a few people who actually seek out aid from food banks, they're people who have full-time jobs, you know, they wear a suit and a tie to work. You know, they're not homeless, you know, they have a home, they have a family and stuff, but it's just that, you know, depending on where they live with the expenses or, you know, hour cuts or this or that, they just get to a point where it's like at the end of the day when all the bills are paid, there's just very little money left over for food, and so they actually have to go to these shelters just to get help and that. Like, it's, you know, there's a difference between starving and food insecurity, and, you know, luckily in America there's not an overwhelming amount of starving, but there is a large amount of food insecurity. And that's, you know, there's conceptions about, you know, who should be hungry and who isn't and stuff, and they're just, you know, a lot of them just aren't true.
Yeah, and it's easy to forget that in an affluent area that just means that the poverty line is higher, which means there's an easier chance to fall under that line. For example, in San Francisco, it's what, like $130,000 a year is the poverty line. It's something outrageous.
That
to most people would be well above. But, you know, if you're living in a place like that where you have those expenses, and especially if you're stuck and you can't get to somewhere cheaper, it's definitely good to have that support.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I managed to dig up a poem, and I think we could use a little bit more. Well, we have a lot of optimism, but I think we could use a little more, because you can always use a little more. So I'm going to read a Bob Ross poem.
Sounds good.
To the eternal optimist, because that guy was definitely an optimist. Do you dream in sailor blue, in early night skies of illusion and crimson? Do you look down, reflecting on all those moments not wasted in anger, spent spreading your brand of joy like landscape stretched over a canvas? Do you see all at once the people you taught to take the beauty they see inside and turn it outward, turning their souls inside out?
Yeah, well, that's definitely true about Bob Ross. In fact, I hope it's time again soon. I hope for Stream to do their annual Bob Ross marathon. That's the Twitch to do. That was a combination of me combining Twitch with streaming, and it came out Steam.
Yeah.
So, don't you love when you do that? But yeah.
I thought,
you know, we're doing every Ross episode, so hopefully it's time. I think it's the time for that annually is coming up again. So.
I didn't know that was a thing, or if I did, I had forgotten, and I'm going to keep an eye out for it because that's exciting.
Yeah, once a year around the holidays, they do. They just run through every single Bob Ross episode. Like, they started it a bunch of years ago, probably, like, I think 5 years ago to when Twitch was relatively new, and they kind of wanted to advertise, like, you know, their ability to stream longer content for long periods. And it's funny because a good chunk of the popularity they got came from their Bob Ross marathon, because it's like all the millennials who are adults now who used to, like, watch it, you know, on you know, the public access TV or whatever, you know, they kind of were like, oh, I haven't seen that in years. And so they, you know, they all watched it, and then, you know, Twitch kind of blew up in popularity because of that.
I didn't know about that. I know that he's definitely, he's got that sort of infectiousness about his joy. You know, like if he's passionate about something, it doesn't matter if you don't care about it, you're still going to feel some kind of joy in the fact that he's enjoying it. You know, there aren't a lot of people like that, but it's always nice to see them work.
Definitely. So that was the show for this evening. So, and like I said at the beginning, just because everybody who, you know, read a poem tonight, they pledged some amount of, you know, help to a food bank that was either in their area or Feeding America. And just from this list that we had here, just the 16 poets, we actually, you know, about $500 had been, you know, contributed to helping the hungry just from that. So thank you, everybody who was a part of this. Thank you, everybody who is listening. Thank you, Nick, for coming on and joining me. And this hopefully won't be the last one that we do this holiday season. We're looking to do one or two more. So keep posted on that. And we're going to be having a Bard's Poetry Revolution is going to have some other exciting things coming up soon. So keep posted on that. Have a happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I know it's a weird one, but we'll keep the optimism. We'll keep the Bob Ross attitude, and should all be good. So enjoy the turkey, and we'll see you soon.
Yep. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Good night.